Sit down.
Press the button.
Mr. Edelstein, sit down.
How would Mr. Gemelli?
It's time.
He's broken it.
Okay, so we saw the Ramban. The Ramban in the Pasuk, Vayira Ba'aretz. The Ramban tells us very clearly this is a chet. Chet gadol, bishgaga. That number one, he put his wife, Sarah, in a vulnerable position by saying she's his sister. And number two...
But didn't he save her life?
One second. And number two... Gam yitziyosai min ha'aretz. His leaving the land. Meaning Yitzchol. Shenet stava le betchil, that he was first commanded to do so. Then they have rough oven ashechata. Avram should not have left the land of Yitzchol. Hashem could have protected him over there. So the Ramban, as we pointed out last time, based on the Medrash, does not shy away from pointing out the others were not perfect. And it's precisely because they're not perfect that we can learn from them. If they were perfect, they would not be role models. Hence I pointed out to you, the Malach, the Torah that the Malach teach us, we forget. It doesn't remain with us. Because the Malach is not a great teacher. Specifically because he's a Malach, because he's perfect, his teachings don't remain with us. So the teaching the Malach gives us in the mother's womb does not remain with us. Avram is Avram Avinu that we can learn from because he's not perfect. And it's fascinating that literally, mamash, within the first few psukim of being introduced to Avram Avinu, Ramban is already saying, Chet chata gadayla, the big sin. The first few psukim. Okay. But obviously, like we said last time, we cannot understand the sin in the same way that you and I would understand. Like the fellow that, a psychologist, who's studying the Torah of the brothers and Yosef, saying, "Oh, this is your classic case of sibling rivalry." Obviously, you're not allowed to take your own weaknesses and project them onto the Avos. Yes, the Avos were chaitim on certain levels, but certainly not our level. And we'll discuss what that means in a few moments. Okay. So for now, gentlemen, we have the Ramban's pshat that this was a mistake for Avram one to say Sarah is my wife, my sister, because that put her in a bad position. Number two, it was a mistake for him to leave Eretz Yisrael. Rashi, on the other hand, seems to say faker. Rashi seems to say just the opposite. L'nasoisoi im yahar achad devarav shalakadosh baruch hu. Rashi seems to say this whole thing was a test. Would he complain? Say, Hashem, you just made me schlep. You just made me break away from my father's homeland and leave. It was such a hard thing to do and go to Yisrael, and now there's a famine here. But he didn't complain about it. It's hard to say he complained about it. So it would seem that he was Aymed bin Nisayan. It would seem that Avram actually was Aymed bin Nisayan, that he accomplished the test, he was able to succeed in the test. So it looks like Rashi and Ramban are going in opposite directions. Ramban calls us a chet, and the Ramban calls us a and then Rashi calls us a triumphant success. Right?
Wow.
Mamash opposites. Ramban says it's a chet, and L'chari Rashi learns this is a triumphant success on Avram's part. That he didn't complain to Hashem. So how do we understand both these pshatim? Can they be compatible or not? Yes, Mr. Edelstein.
Why is the Akedah the only time when it says that Hashem tested Avram?
That's a great question. Let's wait for there. All right? The question was raised already. Why only by the Akedah does the Torah say specifically Hashem tested Avram? Great question. Let's hold up till we get to the Akedah, Mishem. Yes?
I don't know if they are compatible because it could have been a test that he would have complained, but in the test, he did something that he shouldn't have done.
Okay, you could say like this. It was a test. And for the most part, well,
he passed the test, but in passing the test,
it's hard to call it a test if he shouldn't have been there to begin with. He shouldn't have been there. When Hashem tests you, it's by design. You're saying he shouldn't have been there. It was a chet. So you can't say it was a test then.
You're saying the chet of Sarah,
Hold up. Alright? It's hard to say that if he shouldn't have been there, it was a test. All right, so let's take it one step at a time. All right, let's try to understand the Ramban. The Ramban says it's a chet that Abraham left Eretz Yisrael. Doesn't really. He just says he quotes a pasuk that what ki elokim barav yifter mamas that Kadosh Baruch Hu could protect somebody in a famine as well. L'chaira, what was Abraham's choices? I mean, it was clearly a very intense famine. In fact, we pointed out that this was not a regular famine. Right? We said that all around there's no famine, just in Eretz Yisrael. In fact, I don't know if we pointed out, when the pasuk says It says that Avram left. What does it say? It says, "Vayhi rav ba'aretz." Pasuk Yud. Vayhi Avram Mitzrayma. Ki kaved har rav ba'aretz. Pasuk says two things. There was a famine in the land, and then it says ki kaved har rav, which means the famine was quite intense, which means it was an unusually harsh famine. So it's one thing to say, okay, in a regular famine, I can try to stick it out. But in an unusually harsh famine, should Avram try to stick it out? I mean, we have an expression called Ein Somchen Al Nes. You're not supposed to rely on miracles. So why do we assume that Avram did the wrong thing? What should he have done? So one answer is that, in truth, Avram felt compelled to leave because he had this entire entourage with him. And even if he could have been and should have been on a higher madrega, and based on the Tzibur of Lech Lecha, he should have stayed in Israel. He felt if the Lech Lecha didn't apply to everybody else necessarily, that standard of Bitachon was not expected on anybody else. And so he left, not for himself. Maybe perhaps for himself he would have stayed. But for others he felt compelled to leave. In which case, one second. So even though I understand the reasoning of the Ramban, of Avram, why does Ramban refer to as a chet then?
He could have just sent the others
out. Okay, maybe he sent the others out. Okay, maybe. But
oh, he said before.
What we have to understand is that if it was a tremendously intense famine, then certainly maybe Avram himself should not have relied on the Nes. Except what some people say is like this, that Avadi had to leave. But when he left, what was the mindset that he left with? In other words, you know, there's halacha, you have to sit in the sukkah, right? So if you leave the sukkah and you come back, you have to make another bracha, not necessarily, because daita lasa, because he planned on returning. So your mindset is still part of the sukkah, right? There's a concept called daita lasa. If you intend to return, so that even when you leave, it's not considered to be a break. Daita lasar, right? You have that for many halachas. Leaving Eretz Yisrael, daita lasar, give you one day yontif, 2 days yontif. If you daita lasar, that's a status. If your intention is to return, that says your mind says you're still in Eretz Yisrael. You might be physically out of Eretz Yisrael, but your mind, your heart and your mind is still in Eretz Yisrael.
Already.
It could be when Avram left, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sensed there wasn't this daita lasar. There was a sense of relief. I'm getting out of this famine. I have an excuse now because of my family. I have an excuse now because of a really intense famine. But on some level, HaKadosh Baruch Hu detected there wasn't the daita lasar mentality. Right now, you're excused for the moment. You're an einus for the moment. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu detected some sense of relief in which Avram was kind of feeling that, you know, it wasn't a temporary break. He saw this as a more of a, in his mindset, there wasn't this constant sense of, I can't wait to get back this moment. There wasn't this dait de lachsar tension that he should have had, and that was the chet. So it certainly was a much more sublime chet. It wasn't so overt. And Avram had a reason to rationalize why he could leave, either for his family or because it was an extra intense famine. Either way. But after he came, HaKadosh Baruch Hu detected, in a certain sense, that when he left Eretz Yisrael, it wasn't with this sense of sighing, oh yeah, I have to leave Eretz Yisrael. And when he got to Chutz Laaretz, it wasn't with an eye towards, when's the next minute I'm getting back? He didn't have that intensity of Daita Lachzer, and therefore it was considered that he left Eretz Yisrael. If he would have had a Daita Lachzer mentality, it would be he never left Eretz Yisrael. But because he didn't have that constant longing to get back, it was considered to be a break. That's how you could learn Pshat and Rabban. Okay. If that's true, if that we understand that's the case. So now we understand the chet of Avram was much more sublime. It wasn't simply that he didn't pay attention to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chas V'Shalom. And he had reasons to leave for his family, had reasons to leave for himself because it was an intense famine where Ein Samchan Al Neis was too much of an intense famine. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu detected somehow the break was too much. It wasn't a daita lasar break. Understanding that, we can understand now what Rashi is learning as well. And they're not really steerous. What does that mean? You know, sometimes we find that the avos are held responsible for doing an action that they did the right thing by doing it. But they're held responsible because had they been on a higher level, they wouldn't have to resort to that action. In other words, given the level that they're at, they reacted properly. They acted positively. But had they been on a higher level, they wouldn't have had to resort to that action, and they're held responsible for that. Like I used the example the other day when Yaakov meets Esau for the first time, and he sends him all these gifts, and the Chazal say, "Why are you machzik bosnei kelev? You should have left him alone, right? Do not pass go; just go straight home, and he wouldn't have bothered you." Yaakov reacted based on the level he's at now. And for his act, that required that level of ishtadlus to send gifts to Esau. But Chazal is saying, had you been on a higher level, and you should have been on a higher level, you would have, the proper thing to do was just ignore him and go straight home. That we find often in the Torah with the Avos, that they held accountable for not being on a higher level. So even though what they did was right on that level, but they held accountable for not being on a higher level. In fact, it's kind of like a little bit of a takeoff on the film, famous Vilna Gaon of Din V'Cheshbon. What's the Cheshbon of? What does it mean? Hashem judges you and also makes a Cheshbon. Din means on the way you acted, whether it was appropriate or not. Cheshbon is if you did the wrong thing, but you could have been doing the right thing at the time, there'll be a Cheshbon for that. Right? At the time you're doing an Aveira, not only did you do an Aveira, you could have done five more mitzvahs. Now the Cheshbon takes into account what you could have done. So the Avos certainly would give it a din v'cheshbon. Having said that, let's go back to Rashi. Avram acted the way he should have acted. It was a test for him. Hashem sent him packing from Eretz Yisrael. As soon as he gets there, he travels all the way with great hardship to Eretz Yisrael. It's not easy to get there, not easy to break from his family. As soon as he gets there, he's met with this huge, intense famine. And he could have complained, he could have questioned the Kadosh Baruch Hu, said, how could you do this to me? And he didn't. And he passed that test. And then he went to Eretz Yisrael. He left Eretz Yisrael and went to Mitzrayim. And he didn't complain. But had he been on a higher level, he wouldn't have had to leave Eretz Yisrael. So the Ramban says, he could have, it was a chet for him, is because had he been on a higher level, he wouldn't have had to leave. So, both are true. It was a test on the level he was at. But had he been on a higher level, he could have done even better, and leaving Eretz Yisrael is now considered a chet. Because in his mind, had he been on a higher level, there wouldn't have been this daitel achzer, or lack of daitel achzer mentality. In other words, on his level, it was a test that he passed. He didn't complain. Had he been on a higher level when he left Eretz Yisrael, then He wouldn't have felt this relief. He would the Dait Lachsa would have been much more connected to Eretz Yisrael, and it would be Chet. So both are true. He did the right thing, but Afal Pikein, had he been on a higher level, he would not have, he would have always been Dait Lachsa, or he never left Eretz Yisrael, whichever you want to say it. But either way, both are true. It was a test on his level, and on a higher level, it's considered a Chet. That's how you have to learn. If you look at Yaakov Kamenetsky, I think he alludes to this kind of shot. Haven't seen in a while, but I think that's what he's referring to. Okay, so now we have the fact that it was a chet, according to Ramban, according to Rashi, it was a test, and both could be true. All right. Now the Ramban does say also, the fact that he put Sarah in this vulnerable position was a major mess. Right? For how you love Tiach, he should have betochen, that Hashem would be matzalim. And again, the idea of betochen, and how much betachin Avram should have had is also based on how much betachin a person is supposed to have. In other words, there is no one set formula for betachin. Betachin is a sliding scale. What does that mean? Hashkacha pratis is a sliding scale. How much HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervenes in your life depends on how much you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in your life. The more that you see Hashem in everything in life, the more Hashem intervenes. The Baal Shem says, really, I think it's a medrash. They quote the Baal Shem on this. Hashem tzilcha, David HaMelech says, Hashem is like your shadow. What does it mean, Hashem is like your shadow? It means Hashem copies you. Just like your shadow copies you. To the extent that you feel connected to Hashem, to the extent Hashem connects to you. So Hashkacha Prati is a sliding scale. The more that you see Hashem in every point in your life, in fact, Hashem does get involved in every life, in moment in your life. If you don't see Hashem in your life, then Hashem doesn't seem to appear in your life. It's a sliding scale. And betachon, therefore, is based on that Hashkacha Pratis. The more that you live with Hashkacha Pratis, the more you expect to have betachon that Hashem is with you. The very famous story of the Chavetz Chaim is traveling on a train with one of his Talmidim. They were running away from the enemy, and it was Shabbos. And the Chafetz Chaim told the student, you must remain on this train on Shabbos for your safety. I must get off. Meaning, Chafetz Chaim understood that his love of Batach required him to get off the train on Shabbos, that Hashem would protect him. He understood that that was asking too much from most people, and he told Talmud, you must stay on this train, for you will be Pikuach Nefesh to get off the train. You can have that level of Batachim. I mean, not, you can't. You're not supposed to have that level of Batachim. You're not there. You're not actually holding there. In other words, if you really believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there every moment, ain't oid milvadoi, there's nothing but Hashem, you can get off the train and nothing's going to happen to you. But if you're not holding by that madrega, ain't oid milvadoi, then you have to make legitimate shtadlis. So shtadlis is also a sliding scale. So when it says HaKadosh Avram was held accountable for making this shtadlis, he should have more Batachim. In his own mind, maybe he felt more betuk was warranted. He didn't see himself on that level where less shtadlis was required. So he did more shtadlis than he should have on his level. But the fault was he didn't know himself. The fault was he didn't realize he was on that level or didn't, you know, accept upon himself that level of betuk. All right? Okay. So now we understand a little bit that as well. But the other question we have to address is, but why is the consequence so grave? Just because Avraham went down to Mitzrayim. That's why we had to suffer in Mitzrayim for 210 years. We had to go through all the gullus of Mitzrayim. Imagine the Holocaust that we had 60 years ago, 70 years ago, right? And multiply that by 100 times. That was gullus of Mitzrayim. We had to go through all that because of this slight mistake. Again, we're saying the chet was a slight one. It's like he said, right? You can't touch up the other gross chatoyim. On one level, he passed the test. On the other hand, it was a slight chet. And for this, it explodes into 210 years of gullus? That's the question that was addressed last time. We didn't have the answer. Yes?
Could it be that Hashem needed to purify the nation? That we say that the purpose of Zion was that he melted us down to make us like a pure gold.
Yeah, but why so much?
It wasn't the chet that made him do it. It was myself in the bottom, that because of the chet, he punished us in this way.
That's my question. Why do we require so much Kor HaBarzel? Why do we require so much of that smelting pot where you have to purify the iron? Why do we cry so much for that little chet? That's the question. That's good for the question.
I don't think it's because of that little chet. I think because Hashem needed to do this to us.
Why? But the Rabban's saying because it is. You say another reason. The Rabban's saying because it is.
I'm saying that.
Rabban's saying we were Mitzrayim for these years because of this. You say because of other reasons? That's not what Rabban's saying.
No, I'm saying that, yeah, the reason that we were in Mitzrayim, that Hashem chose Mitzrayim to punish us, was because Avram went down from the chet. But that wasn't the reason that Hashem needed to punish us, maybe.
Ah. Okay, you're saying that the location was because of Avraham. But if you look at the Rashi, the Ramban, Val ha-maisa zeh nigzer al zarei ha-gullus betzman biyad paroi.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, maybe you want to say that. Maybe it just means the location. Nigzer al zarei ha-gullus be'eretz Mitzrayim.
So what's a nigzer?
Nigzer was on Mitzrayim. And he does say, b'makam ha-mishpat shama ha-risha v'chet. All right, maybe you want to say that. Okay. All right, it's not Masharoi from other Midrashim, but okay, I hear that. Yes, Mickey, very good.
Even
yes.
Even a small chet from the Sadduk is like bigger than from...
Okay, so what I want to get, let's talk about that a little bit. That's a very important point. In order to understand this, you need to understand what the Avos were. This is Mashal by Reza Chaim Zonneville, I believe. If you're building a building, a 100-story building, and on the 100th floor, when you're putting in that drop ceiling on the top ceiling, so the guy makes a mistake and he's off by a half an inch and it's not perfectly level, you know, parallel to the ground. That may not be so pretty, might not be perfect, but is it going to affect the building in any way? The fact you're off a half an inch in the drop ceiling on the 100th floor? Not at all. If you're off a half an inch in the blueprint, right, the whole building is messed up. Then the whole building is a mess, right? The Avos are the blueprint for Klal Yisrael. If you make a mistake, if anybody makes a mistake, so it's not making a mistake, a half an inch in the drop ceiling. Okay, whatever the mistake is. But if you're the blueprint and you make a mistake, the consequences are staggering. Erech Hanami, it was a small chet on Avram's part for Avram. But the significance for Klal Yisrael, because it's a blueprint, is much, much greater. Let me use a different mashal. If a baby gets a cut, okay, a cut, you gotta deal with a cut. But if the baby gets a cut while it's an embryo in the womb, it's much more severe, much more serious, right? Any flaw in the womb is much more serious. In the development stages, that can be much more serious, right? Kleisha Oren, it is development stages with the avos. They're the blueprint, and Kleisha is in its infancy and its womb stages. During the time in the mother's womb, there's much more sakana that any little thing can have a much greater impact, a greater consequence. So yes, while Avram's chet for himself on a personal level might have been something you and I might have gone undetected, but the Ramban has to call it a chet gadol to make sure we notice it. But even if it was a chet gadol for Avram on his level that we might not have even noticed, the consequence of Kleisel is much more severe. And yes, it explodes in 210 years ago. His lack of emuna or betachin by staying in Israel now develops in us in such a way that we need 210 years of the lesson of Egypt to purge ourselves of the lack of betachin. That's what seems to be seemingly small lack of betachin on Abram's part now festers inside us. It's in our genes from our embryonic stage, and now it's much more intense because we grow with that lack of emuna in our entire development. And so being that it's now grown with us for all these years, to get rid of that lack of betachin gene inside of us requires a much greater purging. Yeah, we'll have it earlier. That's a look after Pshat in understanding from God. Okay. I want to point one thing about this famine in the land that we didn't mention last time in this introduction. This famine is one of 10 famines that are going to take place in world history. And the Medrash quotes the various famines, and this is the first one.
All right. Major famines? Or
what? Famines? Major famines that have worldwide consequences, so to speak.
Yeah, how does this one
have
consequences just in Israel?
Well, it has tremendous consequences. Look what happened to Israel. It's right. The final consequence, or the final famine, is the famine that the Navi predicts. Hine yamim bayim, right? There'll be a famine in the land. V'loy rav lalechem v'loy tzama l'mayim. But the final famine, the final frontier famine, will be a great famine of land, but not somebody who's starving for bread or thirsty for water, but rather a thirst to hear the words of Hashem. So there's a very famous verse from the Ponovitch Rav. The Ponovitch Rav, one second. Most famines are bad things. I understand why, when the Medrash collects the first 9 famines, they're bad. The famine in Eretz Yisrael is bad. The famine that Yisrael has is bad. The famine later on Yaakov had is bad. These are all bad famines. Bad things happen. This is a good famine. The last famine where people are thirsty for the word of Hashem, that's wonderful. Why is that lumped together with the first 9 famines? This is a good famine. Mm-hmm. Why is it lumped together with those really bad, call them punishments or whatever the case is?
Can't find the word.
Yeah, exactly.
What?
If there's a famine, there's a lack for of people it. That want to find it, means that there's also a lack of for the famine.
Okay, you're saying that well, what it's saying, but people be thirsty for the word of Hashem. We're describing the famine to those people that are thirsty for Hashem.
Yeah,
so what's wrong with that?
If they don't have the words of Hashem, then
they do. They're thirsty for the words of Hashem.
Oh, they're thirsty for it, but the fact that there's implies that there's a lack of it.
Okay, let's say a little better. You're getting on the right track. The problem with a person thirsty for HaKadosh Baruch Hu is 2 problems. Number 1, imagine a guy that's in the desert, and he's mamish, no, there's no water, and he's mamish, thirsty, and all of a sudden, up in the distance, he sees, looks like water.
What is this?
He goes, heads out to the water, and he sees it's not water, it's actually paint thinner, it's turpentine, right? But his mouth is so parched, he's so dry, and dying of thirst, that he can't resist getting some wet into his mouth, right? You know, it's gonna kill him. When a person's dying of ruchnius, thirsty ruchnius, there's a tremendous danger, which is they'll take anything, even the wrong ruchnius, to quench that thirst. It's because they're so desperate for ruchnius, if anybody waves, oh, I got spirituality 101, Kabbalah 103, they're going after it because they're so desperate, even if it's empty, even if it's fake, even if it's harmful, because they're so delirious, thirsty, starving, they'll take stuff that's really unhealthy for them. That's the danger of the final famine. When your mom is so thirsty, you're desperate. And when you're desperate, you'll take things that really don't make any sense and even illogical. The other way to say the same thing, it's really the same idea, is that when you're really, really, really thirsty, when you're really thirsty, and you're dying of thirst, even if you put just a little bit of liquid to the touch, it's okay, now I'm done, I'm done. In other words, when a person is just motivated by the fact that he's mamish, his mouth is parched, and he's dying of thirst, all he needs is that little bit to quench his thirst, and he goes, okay, I'm done. He doesn't keep drinking, because the only thing motivating was this feeling of the almost near-death experience. And therefore, people today also, when the mom is starving for something spiritual, the smallest little bit that gives them a whiff of spirituality, they got a whiff, they're happy with that whiff. Because it takes away the death feeling. They get the whiff, but they don't get the real thing. They only get a whiff of it. So they'll get Judaism light. They'll get the cultural experience. They'll get, you know, doing stuff that's somehow connected to something ruchnius, but it's a whiff of it. But the whiff alone keeps them from dying. That's satisfied with that. So those are the two areas where starving to death ruchnius wise could have a, present a potent problem as well. That's how the punishment. Excuse me, I believe this. Okay. Let's go to Pasuk Aleph. And when they were about to get closer to Mitzrayim, and he said to Sarai, his wife, now I know that you're quite beautiful. The famous Rashi, Rashi offers three pshatim, Mr. Kugel, you want to read for us? Medrash Agadah. Pasuk Aleph, let's go. You gotta get the right page. Yes, get the right page, get the right parsha. Yes, these are very important things. Keep turning those pages. Keep turning those pages. You're getting close. Do you have the right sefer? Are you voracious? Gevaldik.
He knows it by heart.
Wow.
You need to step up from last week.
Do you know where you're going?
At least he's got a chumash.
Perkei
Beis,
Pasuk Aleph.
Chumash. Lech Lecha. Oh, that's a good start, Mr. Googler.
Chumash.
Nice.
Shema, do you know where you are?
It's called Rashi.
Rashi.
Hino Yadati.
Hino Yadati.
Ad Achshav. What does that mean?
Until now.
Until now. Lo Hikr Ba.
Hikr Ba. It's not recognized.
Lo Hikr Ba. Not it.
Shikr.
He did not recognize in her. Ba means in her. Why? Why? Keep reading. Shebishnehem. Because of?
Because of Tznius.
The great modesty that they share with each other.
The Achshav Hekir Ba, and now he recognizes her all the day, Maisa, through her action.
Through a particular action. Okay, what's Rashi commenting on?
What did he recognize?
What is before we get to the Maisa that Rashi is referring to, what's bothering Rashi?
How is it possible that he didn't know what his wife looked like?
Yeah, what do you mean? Now I know you're beautiful? He named no. Behold, now I know. What does that mean? He never knew till now she's beautiful? So Rashi first says, yes, to a certain degree, he didn't appreciate all her beauty because he was so modest that he didn't appreciate all her beauty. But Aidei Maisa Hikirba, and Maisa, the Sizachamim brings down a famous Maisa, Sha'oivim Benar, look at Ais Kuf in the Sizachamim. Sha'ovin, they were passing by a river. Patrichos, like Bia Bigadel, she had to pick up her dress. Barosh, I say, fast man. He saw more of her than she normally saw. And that's how he realized that. All right? Okay. Bottom line, that's one pshat. Davar Acha. Another pshat. Well, let's get somebody else over here to read. Moshe, read.
Yeah.
Davar Acha.
Davar Acha. I lost the place with me.
Okay, Rashi and Aleph.
Rashi, yeah, Yud Aleph.
Dover Acher. How did the first Rashi?
Yeah, okay, got it. Dover Acher. Okay. Dover Acher. Minaga Olam, She'al Yedei Turach.
Torach Haderach.
Haderach. I don't know what Torach Haderach is.
What does Torach mean? What's tircha? It's tircha? No, tarach. Tarach.
Like tircha is like a annoyance?
A trouble. So they tirach hadera because of the tircha, because of, you know, the traveling all the way, which is very, you know, causes problems. The traveling, you know, creates, you know, what's the right word?
Difficulties.
Inconveniences, difficulties. Yes, go on.
Adam misbaza.
Misbaza. Besides, on the biyafia,
is Ms. Baza is like becomes embarrassed.
It becomes here. It means it doesn't mean embarrassed. It means like he becomes like it's demeaning. You know, you look disheveled. You don't look dignified. Besides, on the biyafia.
And she was.
In other words, that of course he was familiar with her beauty, but typically speaking, when a person travels,
they become like
you look drained. You look fatigued.
But you're still
right. She retained that beauty.
That
so.
Possible.
What?
How is that possible?
Why isn't that possible?
I mean, if you're traveling the desert,
oh, what do you mean?
She was good with makeup. I don't know.
Huh?
She was good with makeup. Yeah, she invented makeup. No.
Okay, so how's that possible? So you could say like this, that when you're dealing with purely a physical beauty, then in a hanami. You know, when you're not able to take care of yourself physically, so you don't look as good physically. But if your physical beauty is really an expression of your inner beauty, so if you always maintain the inner beauty, then it shines no matter what. So she recognized that her beauty was not just skin deep, so to speak. You saw her beauty was remarkable in every which way. That's what he said. Davar Acher, Pshuto Mikra, go on.
Pshuto.
Let's get Mr. Cameron to read for us. Pshuto Mikra.
Shudash HaMikra.
He's got it.
Go on.
Hine na higyasha. Sheish lidog.
Al yafyech. What does that mean? Hine na higyasha sheish lidog al yafyech. Hine na. Behold now, higyasha.
The time has come.
Yeah. Time has come. Sheish lidog al yafyech.
Worry.
Let's finish.
The Shrekin. Yeah.
What?
To
worry about your beauty. Why? Your dati zeh yamim rabim kifas maraat. What does that mean? I've known for many years that you're quite beautiful. The achshav anaboyim ben nashos shchem mukhar, but now we're coming on these very disgusting people.
Black people.
But like yeah, 1 second. And they are not used to such beauty.
So
now I have to worry about your beauty. Not that now I know about your beauty. Now I have to worry about your beauty. Okay? So Rashi offers 3 pshatim. Question is, why does he offer 3 pshatim? What's wrong with the first pshat? What's wrong with the second pshat? What, right? Again, every pshat.
The first one is that he needs to be worried about her beauty.
Yeah, that's like a stretch. That's like.
Which one's a stretch?
First one. He didn't know what she looked like. Okay.
Let's work backwards. The pshuta shel mikra, which now I know that you're beautiful means not to worry you're beautiful. Well, it doesn't say that. It says hine no yodati. Now I know, right? Now you're kvetching in the words. It means not I know. Now I have to worry about what I always knew. All right. In fact, what you're gonna do is yodati is gonna make sense a little bit in the past tense. Hine no. Behold, now I'm worried about yodati, what I always knew. Understand? According to the Pshuta Shel Mikra, at least Yadati is I knew. Hine na, now I'm worried what I always knew. Right? According to the Medrash, Hine na Hodati. Now it is known to me, not Yadati. Yadati means I always knew. You tell me it just happened now. Right? The word it's kind of confusing. Hine na, behold now, Yadati I always knew. Right? So according to the Pshuta Shel Mikra, at least it's, behold now, I'm worried about what I always knew. Right? But in the Medrash, which at least, it sounds like, when you read the words, now I know that you're beautiful, so the Medrash has to come up with something that, as Bidyan points out, seems a little far-fetched, that he's unaware of her beauty, and also the word Yadati doesn't fit quite the same. Right? Okay, so Lachari, the weakness of the first pshat is it's kind of far-fetched to assume that Avraham was unaware of her beauty all this time. Maybe that's why he goes to the second pshat. But also because the word Yadati doesn't fit in. Right? The reason why he has to move on from the first pshat is because the yodati doesn't make sense. It's not he didn't know yodati, past tense. He didn't know hoidati. Now it's known to me.
Also, right? And also with the problem with the first one, and even once she had to like pick up her skirt to cross the, like,
right.
Avram just commenting on her external beauty.
Yes.
Like,
We're going to explain that a little bit more. We're not
Isn't
done yet.
Is there a different
Dabar Acher?
The Tumah of Mitzrayim is
what?
Is there a different shot that says the Tumah of Mitzrayim is getting to him?
Oh, we'll get there. Very good. Dabar Acher, very good. Very good. Hinei no. Dabar Acher. The minig ha'olam is people, when they travel, their looks become, their beauty becomes diminished, but she remained with her beauty. Now, what's the mile of this shot? What's the mile of this shot?
He wouldn't know in the past that she when she traveled.
Huh?
He wouldn't have known before that when she traveled, her beauty would be diminished. He would only know now, no?
Her beauty was so.
Well, I guess it's their first traveling trip. But what does this pshat offer better than the first pshat? Is your dati any better in this pshat? It
means that when they showed up to this place, she'd still be as beautiful as ever, as they say.
Okay, so he didn't know it makes more sense. One second. Behold, now I'm aware, is because Enochanami, now that we're traveling so much, I see your beauty is incredible inner beauty as well. Right? So the he didn't know that part makes more sense in the second shot. Because like Benjamin said, but you never knew you were beautiful. But then Quinn says, no, I always knew you're beautiful. But now I realize how much your inner beauty accounts for that beauty. So he didn't know is a little makes more sense now. Your dot is a bit problematic. What do you mean? I always already knew. Right? So that's why I have to come to the Pshuto Shel Mikra, which means now I'm worried what I already knew. So that's why you have all three Pshutim. How would you want to conclude one second? That if you look at the words closely, it says, Vayihi Kasha Hikrav Lovai Mitzrayim. Doesn't say when they went to Mitzrayim, when they got closer to Mitzrayim. What does that mean? Mitzrayim was a Mokam Tumah. In every way, they were Mamish people. That were mamish, immoral, decadent in every single way. And Avram's Kedusha is in some level being compromised now by the Tumah Mitzrayim. And as he enters now into the Tumah Mitzrayim, he becomes more aware of a physical beauty called Taiva that he was never aware before. It permeates the year, this Taiva, that he never had a taste of, so to speak. But as he gets closer to the Tumah, to the Mecca of Tumah called Mitzrayim, the Kasher Hikrav Lavan Mitzrayim, as he gets closer to this Mokam Tumah, it permeates the air so much that he himself now schmecks what Taiva is. He knew she was beautiful, but he never put beauty and Taiva in the same sentence. Beauty and Taiva don't have to be the same thing. B'chol not. Beauty is a beautiful thing. Right?
Well,
correct?
Intrinsic.
Intrinsic, so, correct? The Torah created beauty, Hashem created beauty for a reason. Beauty's not evil. The taiva that arises from it could be a problem. Now I realize your beauty could be a taiva. That's the problem. We'll stop here. Okay.